I thought that was a great commentary by Joel Batonio with us right there. Like, yeah, you know what? I'm double digit in years, and I'm going to talk to these guys, and then maybe I'll make my decision. Like, he wanted to talk to him. Because, boy, if he wouldn't have liked what he had heard. Like, again, there's millions of dollars that are on the table. I don't want to be foolish with anybody. Like, that can still, that's still another nice year that you can squirrel away for another rainy day. I get all that. But to have that conversation, then come back and play, it does make you feel good. Because, I like Mike Bloomgren when they made that hire. And I know a lot of people are like, Ken likes everybody, so it doesn't matter. I'm like, you didn't hear me saying a bunch of great things about the last guy. You did not hear me saying a bunch of great things there. But when Joel says it, all right, it certainly has a little bit more weight to it because obviously he plays in the NFL and he plays at a very high level. So I thought that was good. Also, I love the turnover conversation that he had.
They obviously are stressing it time and time again because he said yesterday they had their meetings to really establish identity. Yesterday was the first day, so that was great insight from Joel. And the first thing he said was turnovers. So clearly, you're going to see a very different attack this year. And the ball control stuff, Joel. You know, I'm listening to him on the phone, and we're doing a radio interview. But I could tell his eyes lit up, like they are going to run the football, and that is going to be the identity this year.
It's easy to put on paper, but we're trying to develop that as a group and an offense. Like I said, we want to be multiple. We want to marriage of the run and pass. We want to be physical. We want to play fast. You know, all these things that an efficient offense does and just not hurt ourselves. I mean, it stinks because we've been very bad at it, but Kevin has always stressed, don't turn the ball over. And I think we want to do that this year. Like, we think we have the defensive players play great defense, and if we can control the ball on offense and take advantage of those big plays when we have them, like, we think we can get back some of that magic, you know, from 2023.
So, yeah, I go back and I've said, and you guys have lambasted me. I don't know how great they're going to be. All right? What's the over-under? 4.5 still? Is it 4.5?
Around 5.
I've seen 5.5.
Okay, yeah. 5.5. Depending on the amount of quarterbacks you start, I might not want to go that high. Usually why I go, but I said 6 or 7 wins after the schedule last year,
seven.
Right?
You added a game.
I said definitely 6.
You said 7 and, well, you started 7-11 and then you went 7 and 10. Me,
I said definitely 6. Then I got to 7 and, I was actually 7-11 as you said.
Stop backtracking, you said 7.
I'm not backtracking a damn thing. So I think they're going to do their damnedest to eliminate turnovers by running the ball. It's going to be a lineup, pound it at you type of offense. They're going to try to pound it at you. We'll see if that actually works. But they're going to line up and actually go after you. Because, again, most teams... Now, there are certain scenarios where it's a mixed bag. I went back to 2020. You were plus 5. You were plus 5 in turnover. You were 11-5. Indianapolis, where arguably at that time in 2020, they were not as good a team as you on paper. They were also 11-5. They were plus 10 in turnover margin. San Francisco. Everybody loves San Francisco, right? That was one of their injury years. They had to start, I believe, multiple quarterbacks. They were near the bottom at like minus a billion, and they were 6-10 that year in 2020. They were actually minus 11. In a turnover margin. Denver was actually at the bottom at minus 16. On the other part of it, Chicago, 8-8, they were minus 4. The Rams, 10-6, they were minus 3. Like, you can get there, but damn it, you have to overcome a lot when you have turnovers. And that means that you have to have a lot of talent to overcome turnovers. And some things have to go. Sometimes the luck just goes your way. You can't guarantee that luck's going to go your way. And in 2023, I think you had a lot of luck. I think if you go back to some of those games and some of the silly turnovers that happened, like, yeah, there were some bad teams that you played, and you gave the ball away, and there were chances for those teams to get back in the game. They just weren't good enough. You were better. You were better because of what you did in 2016 and 17 to get to where you were in 2023. By that all going on, and Joe Flacco is a competent quarterback. You saw what happened last year when you didn't have any competent quarterback play, and you turned the ball over. You were an out-and-out disaster. Even without the last four games of the season where they weren't necessarily trying to get wins, they were an out-and-out disaster. So you got to do what you can to eliminate turnovers. So when you guys roll your eyes at me, go, typical Ken, Homer Ken, yeah, I mean, a little bit. I don't want to see him be terrible. I got to be honest with you guys. The other part of it is that, yeah, I think they'll line up, they'll run the ball, and I think they'll win 6-7 games. Because of that, I think other teams will try to throw on them. Their defense is still decent. And I think that, yeah, they'll be able to have some takeaways, and they'll probably win games based on running the ball, as long as they don't get happy and crazy and start turning the ball over like nuts. It's an oil water situation with some of this stuff. I had to go over this. We've been talking about it off and on this morning, but we haven't really got to it on air. You saw the Chris Ronayne letter.
I did.
So here we go. It's another bad letter. A lot of strong words being thrown out here. The war of words is continuing. Chris Ronayne, who is the Cuyahoga County executive. I mean, Lima, you read this. What are some of the strong languages you've read in this? I mean, he writes the word boondoggle here at the end. Boondoggle is a strong word. My God. This is strong stuff. Says the declaration reveals Haslam Sports Group's greed and opportunism throughout this process. The $600 million in bonds requested from Cuyahoga County was never needed for this project. And we now clearly see that you have spent the last 2 years attempting to bully the public and fleece county taxpayers for HSG's private gains. So the gloves have come off. David Jenkins did also issue a reply.
Yeah, because I mean, they've just been going back and forth now.
Yeah.
We're down to basically note passing in sixth grade.
Yeah, we're just getting to public tweets now, basically, long form. My stance hasn't changed through all this. I understand it's gotten ugly, and I get that these things do. My stance has still not changed. I have not seen anything. First off, I've heard way more of Blaine Griffin and way more of Chris Ronayne than I've heard of the mayor over this issue over the last 3 years. Way, way, way more. And also, I'm still just not convinced the city ever really wanted to have them downtown. I think they'd rather do something else with that. But it's not going to be a good look for anybody involved to let the Browns leave downtown Cleveland. So there's going to be some strongly worded stuff. There's also, I haven't seen anything that looks appealing in terms of a renovation, in terms of a new stadium. Now, they say that that's a Browns rendering. You can't come up with your own things last three years.
You've had time.
They say that they've started these discussions in 2017 under an old mayor.
Right.
So this is something that's inherited, obviously, but I've never seen anything that I would consider to be viable that would be taken seriously by the public of replacing the stadium and keeping it downtown or renovating the stadium.
Yeah, I have to say, though, to me, the biggest takeaway here is the county kind of called the Browns bluff on this and might have won here just in one regard. When the Haslams came out and issued their statement, I think it was last week, that we'll just do this on our own. I think the county's like, yes, yes, yes. You just said it. You just took the words out of our mouths. Like, we didn't want to help subsidize this, and now you're saying the project can proceed without us, so we're done. We're done here. So that's what Ronayne is expressing in this letter. Like, you guys just admitted that you can do this and finance that part of it without the county funds, so have at it. By all means, you've just proven that. So I think they called their bluff there. So that's a minor win for those individuals in that regard.
So what can this private group, HSG, do to cut the county out? Because sales tax is sales tax. You got to pay that no matter what. And it's still in the county.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people are sitting there going, well, why is the county executive so upset when it's still in Brook Park? When Brook Park is still in Cuyahoga County, Anthony.
Yeah, that part of it, I don't think we've gotten a lot of great clarity other than the county is expressing that they don't want any funds diverted from what could go to other needed places, especially schools. So they have been adamant about that throughout, that they want the schools to be made whole on that, and that this is a massive project still in the county. How are the schools, how are the students being impacted? How are families being impacted? They've been adamant. They haven't necessarily given a lot of clarity on how.
You say schools and families, that's strong language.
Sure, but I don't, PR-wise, doesn't seem to be working. It seems like everybody's ganging up now on the county and they're handling over this.
Well, because I think people want to see something that, okay, you want to keep it downtown. How do you do this? How do you do this? Because the rendering that I saw that was the reimaging of what a renovated stadium would be. I mean, that looked like an IKEA piece.
Yeah,
what was that
terrible
thing that's out in your backyard? The portico. What the hell is that? What was it? What was it? Pergola.
The pergola.
Yeah, I don't know what the hell it is.
Yeah.
Who am I?
I have a porta potty in my backyard.
No, I think the there's a pergo or something like that that goes over someone's driveway.
I'm not agreeing with that word being a word, but pergola, yes.
Now I got to look that up during the break. I need to see if you come up together with a kick-ass thing, because I know it's half the money, and people say it's fine. It's devolved into, well, can the Goodyear blimp fly over it now? Which is
important. You got to have those aerials.
You know, you do realize you build all these things in indoor facilities, we're probably going to be done with a Goodyear blimp.
Yeah, will that be the end of the blimp and the beautiful imagery as we know it?
If you can't look up and see the Goodyear blimp.
But we can still do fireworks.
Can you? We?
No.
You got to walk outside and see the fireworks, blimp, and you got to walk back in.
The blimp won't fly because it's an indoor facility. It's because it's next to the airport.
Oh, yeah. That could be an issue, too.
Wait, planes are landing.
But
they
also, you can't see
fly
it.
Fly through the blimp, Ken.
You can't see it. Are you supposed to look up through
it? You can't shoot Roman candles off at the stadium.
In Washington's new stadium.
A Delta.
Can you see it through the glass ceiling up there? Can you see the blimp?
Oh, yeah, but you've got to break through it to really...
These are all the considerations. This is maybe why you haven't heard from the mayor lately, is he's still going through these considerations.
I'm pro blimp,
we're just getting started.
Was the last time he's been out about this subject, talking about this?
I was looking for him at the marathon.
He was not at the marathon.
I did not see him there.
Chris Renane was at the marathon.
He was standing up right next to me.
He got on the
microphone. He had a loud booming voice. Look, this still all boils down to, in the interim, what is Mike DeWine going to do when he has a bill in front of him that has this type of public financing? What is he going to do? Because he says he has a much better way to pay for it with the gambling rather than taking it from the current bond structure.
This guy joins us right now on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Who the hell is this guy? It's Danny Cunningham from the Locked On Cavs podcast, The Inside Shot, Cleveland Magazine, 92.3 The Fan, and 92.3thefan.com. Hello, Danny.
Good morning, Ken. How are you?
Oh, it's wonderful to hear you. You know what? I wasn't as upset. I know that some people, they drove around yesterday at 11 o'clock listening to the press conference, which we carried live on 92.3 The Fan, is seething. They were seething listening to that press conference yesterday. And I said, well, there's no reason to seethe. He's got to say these things. He can't sit there and say, we're going to trade all of them. Tell them to pack their stuff and get out of here. Couldn't say that then. But do you think that Kobe may have something up his sleeve for this offseason?
I think he has to. I think that the Cavs are going to have to look at least a little bit different next year. Last year, he got up there and said, you know, I don't understand why Jared Allen and Evan Mobley can't coexist. I don't understand why Darius Garland, Donovan Mitchell can't work out together in the backcourt. And I certainly, I know a lot of people didn't take him at his word. I was one of them. I did not believe that would happen, and it did. But I also think it's worth reminding people that executives are not required to tell the exact truth in these press conferences. It does not matter if it's Kobe Altman, doesn't matter if it's Andrew Berry, doesn't matter if it's any other executive in any other sport. They're not required to detail their full and complete plans. I think that last year I expected there to be some change. There wasn't. I would be very surprised if there's not change to a certain extent, whether that is with the core group of players, whether that is on the edges. I think the Cavs will look at least a little bit different next year. I don't know if anything that Kobe said yesterday makes me feel stronger about that, but I just think when you kind of look at where they're at financially with what has happened, the fact they've lost the last 2 years in game five of the second round, I do think there needs to be some sort of change to the roster.
Well, the counterpoint that I'm mostly getting from fans who love the vibes and had such a great time all regular season, how could you not? They look like the best team in basketball or second best team the entire year, is that there's no more big bad Boston Celtics next year. Giannis could be heading to the West. Who knows with Philadelphia and the Pacers and Knicks. It's not like some unmovable object, so why not just wait it out? Why not just run it back and attack it again next year and hope you're healthier?
I mean, all of those are fair points to make, but are you better by running it back? Like, I do think that there's a danger in saying, well, everybody else is going to get worse. We can say the same. I think that the Cavs need to be better in terms of who they are as a postseason group. They don't need to be better in the regular season. They've won 64 games. If they win 57 games next year. No matter what they look like, they're going to have Donovan Mitchell. They're going to have Evan Mobley. They're probably going to have Darius Garland. They're going to be a very, very good regular season basketball team that's going to win a lot of games, and none of it's going to matter because they need to win probably at least 12 games in the postseason for anybody to be happy with what happened. So just running it back mean that, yeah, we'll have the same regular season success, but where do we get better in the postseason? I think that is the question that they need to be asking all offseason, and I think that's the thing you have to look at is how is this team next year better suited to play playoff games than they were this year? And I do think injuries matter, and we probably have gone, I think, a little bit past the point of, well, injuries aren't an excuse to now they don't matter, which is just not true either. So I think that does need to be accounted for, but ultimately I think this team needs to be reshaped a little bit, and I would not be surprised if they made a significant move this offseason. I would not be surprised by that.
What is your definition of a significant move?
I think Jarrett Allen certainly qualifies. Somebody that is thought of to be part of the core. Although I did think it was interesting yesterday when Kobe was talking about internal development. And I don't know if this was done on purpose, but kind of reading between the lines, you wonder about this. He said, we're not counting out a 28-year-old Donovan Mitchell. We're not counting out a 25-year-old Darius Garland. We're not counting out a 23-year-old Evan Mobley. And in that answer, he mentioned those three guys. And I think that is what the core actually is. But he did not mention Jarrett Allen. And I thought that kind of said something without actually saying anything, if that makes sense. So I do think that if you make a significant move, he's the one to make. I think it could open up the roster in some interesting ways. Now, it's a very complicated time financially, being in the second apron, being a very, very expensive team that they're going to be. But that is the significant move I would look to make, and I think that's the significant move. If they do make one, that is probably the most likely.
The toughness angle of all this, we're joined by Danny Cunningham, covered the Cavs home and on the road throughout the season in the playoffs. So toughness, yesterday, just listening to Kobe Altman, sounded like he thought toughness can be developed over time. And there are examples of that in the NBA, but there are also a bunch of guys that never really get that, and sometimes you have to go get them. Where are you on the toughness debate?
I think that if this instance did not develop mental toughness for this group, I don't know that anything ever will. And I'm not sitting here saying that everybody on this roster is devoid of mental toughness, because that's just completely not true. But I do think that there are guys that is an area where it needs to grow, where I think they need to be better. And if this didn't do that, I don't know what will. And are you willing, as an organization, to take the gamble that this develops that? Because you're not going to realistically know until the postseason gets here. You're not going to know if the mental toughness has been developed during the regular season. I thought this team was plenty tough during the regular season, and then they get to the postseason and things are very, very different. So I do think that it's a gamble if you run it back and say, yeah, we are mentally tougher now because of what happened. It could be. I don't know. But I think if it doesn't happen now, I don't know that it ever will for some guys.
Do you believe that they can, like, a person can become tougher, that they can learn to be tougher?
I think you can learn through experiences, yeah. I mean, I'm not saying that anybody that's not mentally tough is going to sit here and become LeBron James or Kobe Bryant in terms of those things. But I think that as a person, as a basketball player, you learn through your failures and you learn through your experiences. And I do think that those things that can help shape you can help you to move forward in that area. Again, I don't think that you're all of a sudden going to become this mental Iron Man, but I do think that you can grow.
Danny, the way that they talked about not only the physical toughness, but also mental, the mental side of things, is really hard. That's an abstract concept, I think, for many, especially just fans watching sports, listening on the radio or whatever. Like, what does that even mean? Kenny Atkinson brought it up. The players all brought it up. And then Kenny Atkinson at the end of the year talked about their program and, you know, the different ways that they measure all of this stuff and the data. But I do think it can get kind of hard. And if you think you can always develop something, then you'd never change your team ever. You would just keep your team every year and then just work on the points where you show deficits in the playoffs. But if you do that, you know, likely story is you're probably never going to win.
Yeah, I that's why I think that there need to be changes. That's why I think that they running it back as is, I do think would be somewhat of a mistake for this group, because they've finished essentially in the same, and not the same exact spot, but they've finished with some sort of disappointment in each of the last three postseasons. And Kobe Altman spoke to sort of what he viewed as the mental toughness, and he kind of pointed at the end of game two quite a bit during that press conference, if you listened. Like, he is very clearly not over that game, and he shouldn't be. I don't think anybody in that organization should be over what happened at the end of game two against the Pacers, but it's kind of a how come this hasn't been learned by now type of thing. Like, shouldn't the loss against the New York Knicks have delivered some mental toughness growth? And I'm sure it did. Shouldn't the win against Orlando have delivered some mental toughness growth? I think that the notion that they were ever going to do anything other than lose to Boston last year if healthy is a silly one, because that Celtics team was significantly better than the Cavs. But shouldn't that have delivered some growth in terms of the mental toughness? Then I think for them to fail in the way that they did, especially in game two, raises a lot of questions. And the fact that the series was kind of lost in that game. And we didn't necessarily want to say it at the time, because you don't want to count a team out, especially a 64-win team that's not healthy and could be getting guys back. But the Cavs really never recovered from the moment that Tyrese Halliburton shot hit the bottom of the net at the end of game two.
Danny Cunningham joining us here on the show. For Donovan Mitchell, would they consult with him even in back channels ways about maybe moving one of the other three pieces around him in the core four?
I think that if you are making a big move, I think it would be silly to not talk to Donovan Mitchell about it, because he's still the best player on this team. And I think it would probably be silly to not talk to Evan Mobley about it at least a little bit too. I'm not saying that Evan has the same level of power. He's not the same caliber of player Donovan Mitchell is yet, but the Cavs very firmly believe that he's going to be. I think he's going to be somebody that makes first team All-NBA at some point. They've put a lot on his shoulders. I thought that was evident yesterday. And I do think that you need to at least consider talking to those guys when you're doing when you're making big moves. Not saying that their opinions are going to drive the decision-making, but I also don't think that you want to blindside either of your superstars if you do make some sort of roster-shifting move. I think that's a bad thing too. So there has to be some sort of balance there, yeah.
What if that move includes Evan Mobley, Danny? Like, maybe Mobley for Giannis. Would you make that move?
I would make that move. That move is not going to be made. I think it's much, much more complicated than just saying, you give us Giannis, we'll give you Evan Mobley. That is, I will say, that's about the only available guy that I would trade Evan Mobley for. And I think every team in the NBA would do that, including Milwaukee. But that is not happening. I would be...
Well, if Milwaukee would do it, why wouldn't it happen?
Because there are a lot of complications that need to happen. And I also think, in terms of like the financial ramifications, this would essentially mean the Cavs would have to lose almost everybody off their roster other than Mitchell, Garland, and Giannis to get under the second apron. And then they would have to have and DeAndre Hunter, and then they would have to fill out the rest of the roster, so the other seven spots essentially with veteran minimum guys. And I just do not think that is a way to build a basketball team. I do not think that is something that is going to happen. And I also think Milwaukee probably wants quite a few draft picks, and the Cavs don't have the ability to do that because Donovan Mitchell is on the roster and all of the Cavs draft picks are now with the Utah Jazz. So I don't think that move is going to happen. However, that is like the only one I would consider trading Evan Mobley for in a vacuum. I think that highly of him that, you know, if Giannis is on the table, okay, let's talk. But that is not going to be something that we see happen, no.
Seven different NBA champions in 7 years. Good for the league or bad for the league?
I think it's good for the league because I do think that they need to start having some other stars find a way to become household names, right? Like, how long has this LeBron, Steph, KD era gone on? It's been forever, so much so that we kind of missed the Giannis, Jokic, Embiid era, right? Like, that era doesn't exist because LeBron, Steph, and KD were so good for so long. Those guys aren't going to play forever. They're probably on, like, the 17th hole of their careers, to put it in golf terms. They need other guys to step up and be stars. They need SGA to be somebody that is a household name. They need Anthony Edwards to step up and be somebody that could be considered the face of the league. Having the New York Knicks good is always good for the league. Tyrese Halliburton's a phenomenal player. Having him become a household name would be a really good thing for the league, especially considering the style of basketball that Indiana plays that I think is a very fun style to watch. I think it is good for the league if you have different teams. And truthfully, it's also, you know, the NBA wants to be the NFL in some ways. And I think the parity is a way where they would like to be the NFL, where you feel as if your team, if you're anywhere near decent, has a chance. That might not always be true, but you want the fans to feel that way. And I think this helps to accomplish that.
Danny, thank you for the time.
Anytime, guys.
Danny Cunningham, Locked On Cavs podcast, the Inside Shot on Substack, 92.3 The Fan, Cleveland Magazine. Follow him on Twitter, at The Real D Cunningham. Just had Danny Cunningham on. Asked him about the whole Giannis thing. It's not likely to happen. Here's why Danny says. Nope, never mind. That ain't going to happen. Not right now. Now it might happen. Only for Giannis. Would you make that move?
I would make that move. That move is not going to be made. That's about the only available guy that I would trade Evan Mobley for, and I think every team in the NBA would do that, including Milwaukee.
Well, if Milwaukee would do it, why wouldn't it happen?
The Cavs would have to lose almost everybody off their roster other than Mitchell, Garland, and Giannis, and DeAndre Hunter, and to get under the second apron. And then they would have to fill out the rest of the roster, so the other seven spots essentially with veteran minimum guys. That is not going to be something that we see happen, no.
All right, I could see that. I mean, I could see that. So there's those possibilities where you just wouldn't be a very deep team. But I mean, dollars to donuts, you would. I'm glad he said he would make the trade, because I'm like, well, guys, Evan Mobley's not Superman. Like, you got to be willing to trade him for somebody. If you weren't willing to trade him for somebody, he'd be the greatest in the league. Like, he'd be LeBron type. Like, that's basically where we're at. I mean, what you're willing to trade Luka Doncic, which you could say, hey, well, that was a stupid move. I don't have to consider it because of him. Fair point. But I still think you have to consider, like, hey, it's all on deck. You guys were a disappointment for the third straight year. And the other ones were, those were explainable. Definitely explainable. You know, you got to break through the walls and do all the other thing. I get that. There's teams that have more experience and all that other stuff. Got it. But damn it. Like, now, this is year three. And regardless of whether or not you make moves, we have to understand this. Because of where Donovan's contract is, you probably have two more seasons anyway. So if you were to get Giannis, oh my gosh, that's a win number. It's a win now anyway with Evan Mobley. So then you have to ask yourself, can he step up to that level? Well, in all honesty, he's probably going to have to step up to that level, because I don't know how much of this stuff is realistic whatsoever. So the pressure is just insurmountable on Evan Mobley. Lima hates something, and I'm going to ask him why, because I think he's being a total idiot. That coming up at 9:02. No offense to you, bud.
No, none taken.
Could we be seeing the end of the AFC North? Don't get mad at me. I'm sorry, guys. I don't know what we're going to do on Wednesdays during the football season and even during training camp and all the other stuff when we go around the AFC North. What are we going to do? Are we going to just go around the AFC? Is that what you want to do? Is that it? Because you know what happens if they do the reseeding that everybody seems to want, because nobody wants to. It's amazing to me that a guy who, you want this, you want the reseeding in the playoffs. They would take them basically 1-7, the best seven records. Isn't that right?
Yeah, it's how
you. And so you would get those teams.
Yeah, it's last year was all time silly. What happened in the NFC with the Minnesota Vikings? Did they lose three games all year? They like 14-3.
Yeah, and it was week 18 against another 14-2 team.
Yeah, and they had to go on the road to play a team that had won nowhere near the amount of games as them. And I've asked this question for the last like 5 years. Like, why are we going with something that seems so counterintuitive? Like, we're overthinking it. Like you have 17 games to prove which teams are better, at least in a regular season, just based on record. Why is it so hard? Why can't we just go to the records and really make it so that regular season, those games, each and every one of them, count for something pretty big, and use that to determine who gets home field advantage in the playoffs? Like, it never made sense to me that we would do it any other way other than that.
This is what makes this tough. How can I argue against logic? Because that's what it is. The only way I can argue against logic is entertainment. I can argue against logic with entertainment. It's more entertaining to win your division. I wholeheartedly agree. I wholeheartedly believe.
What do you mean by that?
I think teams still celebrate them winning a division. Jim Irsay, make fun of us all you want. We haven't won a division since 89. I got it. Jim Irsay, whether you think it's funny or not, they still hang banners in that stadium over their divisions. And winning the division. Division champs, reigning division champs, how we start conversations, how we finish conversations. They still put it on T-shirts. It's still something that means something to people. Because usually, football especially, is the last place where rivalries matter. They're trying to make it matter in baseball. I don't know if it's really going to catch on. But it's the last place. You yourself, you argue, what is college football doing? Now we're going to have a 16-team playoff here. Now we're going to convolute it even more. And what's it doing to the rivalries? Now you're wanting to move the sacred Ohio State-Michigan game because you want to protect the rivalry. You're a guy who wants to protect rivalries. You know what? I see it your way here with the NFL. Because there's no rivalry in college football that means as much to me as what the game is going to mean to you. You went there. You're a Buckeye fan. That's what it is. I've checked out years ago on that. But when it comes to the NFL, I still think, yes, it's lopsided. I get excited when I get cussed out by Steelers fans on social media. I really do.
But why do you think
I love
that,
it, and I don't want to lose that.
Why do you think you'd lose it? I mean, you'd still play Pittsburgh, and you could do it to where...
Would you play them twice a year?
Yeah,
what's the point?
Why not?
What's the point of playing divisional opponents twice a year?
You're going to have 18 games soon. Why couldn't you play Pittsburgh twice a year?
I don't know why you'd have to, but I don't know
how
why you have
to... How is it fair that you get to play Pittsburgh twice a year, but somebody else doesn't?
There you go. Thank you.
The Bengals don't.
Thank you.
Ravens.
It makes sense now that you're in a division.
Wait a second. There's 32 teams until you have 32 weeks of football. You're never going to have a perfect
31.
Setup.
You're not going to have a perfect setup.
Yeah, you play yourself.
But
maybe
then
you'd actually be able to
You have... One of the special, because I mean, we play in a division in the NBA that I don't think people can name.
Yeah,
who's
nobody
in the Cavs
cares
division.
About divisions.
We have a division nobody cares about when it comes to Major League Baseball. Maybe the Tigers, maybe, and that's kind of stretching it, I think. But in the NFL, I mean, you have a whole division that's birthed from the Cleveland Browns.
Well, I think people.
No,
well, let's. We should explain
the Ravens,
this.
The Bengals.
We should explain this that under. Under these rules that they're going to be voting on at the owners' meetings, the Browns might have actually hosted a home game in 2023.
I understand that.
And why do we want to be penalized just because of the unbalanced divisions around football, which are always going to be unbalanced?
But I don't think that's a good argument.
I just think it would have been pretty cool. The Browns, I felt, earned it by winning enough games.
It
and had they
have cool.
needed to play in that final week... You know, maybe it would have made the regular season even more exciting at the end of the year.
It would have been cool. I don't know if making the playoffs is exciting enough.
I think right now the last month of the regular season, the last few years, has been a drain in the NFL.
I don't believe
backup quarterbacks starting all over the place. Last year,
why wouldn't there be backup quarterbacks?
It seemed like everything was pretty much determined in the AFC who was going to be going. And because you have these direct, locked-in, you know, seeds based on who wins the division... And who's going to have home field? You know, there's even less to play for at the end of the year. When
I might
happens.
Have a way to appease both of you.
What's that?
I don't want to tell you now.
Okay, hold off until 9 o'clock.
Okay.
All right. I don't understand why you still wouldn't have. You're still going to have the same amount of playoff teams.
Mm-hmm.
I don't understand why you wouldn't get the same amount of backup terrible quarterbacks in the last month of the season.
No, you would. You would. What I'm saying is, right now under the current setup. When you win your division and you're guaranteed a home game just based on that, instead of record, then you have other teams saying, well, why, if my seating is kind of dictated, like I'm going to prefer health overall.
Oh, I've got a way to
since I'm not going to have home field advantage.
I've got a way to appease both.
But I still think the better of the teams are the ones that win. I think an ass beating like what we
dealt
with a couple
mean?
Of
the better of the teams are the ones that, what does that mean?
The talent is going to win out because you're better football teams in the NFL. I don't think home field advantage matters nearly as much as it used to in the NFL. Not nearly as much.
Oh, that's okay. That's true, but that's a different question
and
altogether.
If we're talking about weather, well, first off, we all want to play underneath the dome now, so that's part of it. The other thing is that if you want to go back to the Houston game, I think an ass beating like that is weatherproof. They did a lot of misdirection at you. They did a lot of things that I just don't think we know, unless it was a foot of snow out there.
So, but the bigger question, do you think it makes sense to have to travel on the road to a team that won three less games, or sometimes four less games than you did
over
the course of 17 games in 18 weeks?